Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hi folks, this is Richard Hall here from Stonehenge Aotearoa, and I've got Kay Leather with me.
Hello everybody.
And this is the night sky. There's me and Kay, and we've got that other bloke with us as well, Keith Austin.
Yeah, Keith Austin.
There he is there with his guitar, yeah. Okay, what I thought we'd talk about tonight, oh, I always forget to sponsor our sponsor, Dan Browson, YRAPA Web Design. He's a very close friend of ours. Okay, I thought today what we might talk about is stone circles. I come from Stonehenge, and stone circles are intimately linked with the stars and so on, and in fact there are really, to some degree, the very first observatories created, and they also form a founding point of civilization. So I thought we'd take you through, and you'd better see some of the reasons why we decided to build this stone circle out there. Anyway, to start off with, at the moment, Stonehenge Aotearoa is open Wednesdays to Sundays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Guided tours, Star Trek laser tours, you can book outside that time.
That's right.
Well, but you have to book them.
They have to be booked, yeah. So you need just give Kay a call at Stonehenge.
Or book in through the booking system, Richard.
Yeah. Okay. So we've got that. And just in our night sky at the moment, I guess there's what you'll see just after sunset. You can't miss it, really, if you're looking towards it. It's an absolutely brilliant star there. And, well, it's no star at all. It's actually the planet Venus. Which we often call the evening star. Of course, we call it the evening star or the morning star because you only see Venus, just after sunset or just before sunrise. And the reason for that is that Venus is closer to the sun than the Earth, so it's the only time we can actually see it. Following behind Venus is another very bright star, which outshines all the other stars except Venus, and that's the planet Jupiter in the sky. All right. So we've got two big bright planets in the sky at the moment. Anyway, let's have a look at these stone circles. When we came to build Stonehenge, because we used the word Stonehenge, a lot of people thought we were building a replica of what was on Salisbury Plain. I've got a picture of that coming up to scale. Well, the diameter is roughly the same, but there really the resemblance ends, because if you actually want your stone circle to work, rather than just be a big garden ornament, it has to be designed for its specific spot on the Earth. And that's why every stone circle around the world is unique.
It has to be designed for that specific location.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Otherwise it won't work. We'll see that in a moment, okay? Now, also the other thing is the word henge is an ancient English word meaning circle. So always you find around a big stone circle is a circular ditch, and that is a henge, and this is the one that's around at Salisbury Plain, and at the centre you've got a stone circle, a stone henge, right? So that's where those words come from, right? And of course when we built ours we used the word stone henge. It's not copying what's somewhere else, it is a stone henge, it's a stone circle.
And we do have a circle around the outside, but according to health and safety, it's covered up. It's got an overflow in it.
They never had health and safety issues, yes. I guess, with the original Stonehenge.
No, you either lived or you died.
Well. Yeah, get on with your job. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and all of these stone circles, which we do find them all the way around the world, go so far back in time. They're long before the time of the written word. So everything we know about them is all based upon archaeological evidence, all right? And the one on Salisbury Plain, as I've just brought up in Wiltshire, its construction on it started about 4,500 years. But it was built over a long period of time, long before there was a stone circle. We now know there was a wooden circle.
Yes, and wood hinge.
Yes, and because wooden posts could be moved slightly to make sure you get everything absolutely accurate, and then later they were replaced by stones. But as I say, there's stone circles all the way around the world. I just pulled up for those watching it on TV. Here's the Callanish stones in Scotland. Their age is 5,000 years, so they're 500 years built 500 years earlier than Stonehenge in Britain.
They're fascinating because the tops are shaped. They've got a an angle on them. They look like a shaped chisel, yeah, or something. Yeah, and when you look at it from certain angles, you can see that the angles on the stones all they match. From the outside to the inside, yeah. But that angle that, for those watching TV, is not showing that very well on this particular photo.
I've never been there, but I would love to, because it's not until you go to these things you begin to discover things.
It's evidently in a very important place. It's the topography and the view behind it which is really important, as well as the Callanish stones themselves, yeah.
Okay, I'm just picking up one or two others. Here's Drombeg. That's not so old. It's 3,000 years old in Ireland. And then Castle Rigg, which is 5,000 years old, same as the Callanish stones. And then I've just brought one up from Africa, or Egypt, Nabtaplaya, which is 7,500 years old.
Yes.
And they're just uncovering some in Mesopotamia now, which are going back more than 10,000 years in time. And they've just simply been buried underneath sand for thousands of years. So these, and when you look at these structures, I'll tell you what, folks, if you ever go up alongside them, you stand next to the stones, you say, bloody hell, how did they build that? You know, yes. Without cranes.
It's one of those things that I was puzzled when I saw the English Stonehenge. I mean, okay, you people can build a Stonehenge here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, using modern construction techniques and that, but how on earth did they move and build and put up those stones?
Before cranes and stuff like that.
On them, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Well, we have been making some amazing discoveries about these stone circles in just recent times, but actually from the DNA that's been left on the stones by the people who were handling them and so on. And what they discovered, that most, if not all, of these stone circles around the world were built by hunter-gatherers.
Mm.
So they predate what you would call civilization, the first farming communities.
They probably caused it.
Yeah. Yeah.
They caused people to stay in certain areas and to perhaps develop things. I mean, if you were, they know they were hunter-gatherers because of what was left there, that they were gathering gathering plants that were growing wild on the hills and that kind of thing. But if you imagine it, you were there and that some of those plants seed themselves, and then you think, oh, that's a good idea, let's let's have them growing here instead of going up the hill.
Exactly. Because what typifies a hunter-gatherer society, of course, is that they
don't move.
They
do move.
They do. The hunters, in particular, they have to follow the wild.
That's right.
And so there's
they're following the seasons
settlement.
Yeah.
So something made these people say, "Okay, this is where we're going to settle. We're going to stop our hunter-gatherer ways. We're going to settle here, and we're going to, instead of spending time looking for food and hunting animals and that, we're going to build this big stone circle."
They saw the opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
And in fact, some of the later parts of the Henge were built by people who were pastoralists rather than hunter-gatherers.
Yeah.
The beginning of it was certainly hunter-gatherers.
Exactly.
So, but one of the important things you have to remember when you look at it is what we're talking about is a Stone Age culture. So the people who built these stone circles were themselves living in the Stone Age. This is long before people had metal or anything like that. So even... So they certainly didn't have cranes or tractors or bulldozers, right? But they didn't have even metal tools to begin to.
You wonder how on earth they could shift those big stones, 40 tons, you know, 12 tons, 60 tons for the ones in the middle. I remember reading once at one of the other ancient sites, and the archaeologists there were doing experiments, you know, to sort of see how they could shift stones, not that big, but stones. And one young man, after a while, said, "Can I say something?" And they said to him, "Yes." And he said, "Well, when my grandfather had to shift something very heavy, he went down to the sea, gathered kelp, put that down, and you just pushed it." So they tried it, and it worked.
Yeah.
Sometimes the evidence is not there.
Yeah.
because the evidence, I mean, you could gather kelp and dry it and then put it in water and it comes all soft again. So you could be gathering kelp for a long time and use that and just, not slid, wheels, but kelp.
They slid the stones along.
Or maybe they slid it across parts of it. I mean, what I'm saying really is, sometimes if you use some natural thing like that, there is no evidence for you to see.
No, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's on such a scale, I've brought that but the little picture there. A lot of people question. I remember reading some things. Our ancestors couldn't have built these things.
Well, they did.
I know. But some people suggest that they were done by aliens.
Oh, but they do that. Aliens, giants.
Yes,
Merlin,
giants, yeah.
They're all different explanations for that. Whoever's saying it's too hard for us, so therefore it couldn't be done.
It's underestimating our ancestors, isn't it?
Yeah,
because we don't live in a culture where we haven't got machines and that. Yeah. But if you put your brain to it, as you see from that picture there, people would have worked out how do we move a gigantic stone.
I know somebody else who actually had big stones like that and put little stones in between them and was twirling the big stone around on top of another one and getting it in the right position.
Yeah.
I mean, again, what evidence would you have for that?
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but what we do know is they were built by our ancestors, and if you had put some thought into how they would do it, even getting those big stones on the top there, one suggests...
That was what puzzled me. How did they get those things up there?
Yeah. Well, we don't know for certain, but one theory I saw was that they did it with soil. They built like an embankment up against
the... Oh, they did that in the pyramids, but there's no evidence for that there.
Yeah.
Mind you, if you look at some of the other stone structures, the ones that look like standing stones with stones on top, they had dirt all over them, and that dirt's completely disappeared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there are ways to do it if you think about it. It's just that these days, because we've got machinery around us, we never even think about that.
But somebody, I remember reading about somebody who asked one of these big construction firms if they could build Stonehenge the way it was originally, and he said no.
Yeah.
They don't have anything that can cope with that kind of weight.
Mm. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
There's a similar case with the pyramids in Giza. In Egypt, and one of the big German construction firms, the boss man, was asked if he could actually do that with modern equipment. He said he couldn't, because the stones involved in building the pyramids, particularly getting up that high, he said it would have been impossible.
Yeah.
So
it's absolutely, those things are absolutely awesome, aren't they?
It's a matter of lost art, you know. These ancient peoples, you know, with their, you know, fur cloaks and spears and lack of metal and that sort of thing, they had, they developed some kind of technology which was suitable for doing this kind of thing. And, of course, we don't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, you think of another step to somewhat one side. Mm. Imagine taking on a lion with a spear with a stone tip on it.
Yes.
Or a mammoth.
Or a mammoth, yeah. I wouldn't certainly like to try that.
Maasai in East Africa and the Zulu in South Africa. That's exactly what they did. They would take on a lion with nothing but a buffalo hide shield and a short spear with a stone tip on it.
Yeah. So, yeah, so they were built. Mm. Okay. Now, we also know that they were a meeting place of tribes. All right. So these things weren't built just by one tribe, but by lots of different tribes. Right?
Mm.
And in fact, there's a lot of evidence that the different stones were placed by different tribes. In other words, the DNA on each stone was slightly different. So each of those stones was placed there by a different tribe.
Mm.
And we now know that the stone circle was painted. Right, and they're trying to work out the patterns on there.
I was going to mention.
Yeah.
It was painted on the inside. It's the inside. If you're on the inside, the stones are more smooth. On the outside, they're rough.
Yeah.
They've got those rough. You can see it in that picture. They're really rough and nobody's tried to make them look straight. But on the inside, they are as straight as they could get it. Remember, they're only hitting stone with another stone.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that stone's not easy. Sometimes when people come to Stonehenge and I do a tour, they say, oh, yeah, they knock one stone against another. And I throw them a stone and say, okay, well, there's some stones going up towards the henge. See how much you can get off the stone. They soon gave up, I can tell you. They're not easy. The sort of stone that's going to stay together when you put it upright like that under those conditions and not break on you, it's not easy to break little bits off.
So each stone represented a different tribe. That's what the evidence is beginning to put. And because people were meeting at these stone circles, different tribes and so on, after a while, people began to settle in the area, and that gave rise to the very first permanent settlements. So what historians are saying now, these stone circles were the starting points of civilization as we know it.
I could almost imagine an awful lot of intertribal fighting and conflict and so forth, and some chief, I don't know, but somebody said, this is crazy, we can't keep having this going on, let's bring all the tribes together into one meeting place and we can meet and discuss our differences and get things sorted out. And it's almost like a political...
Exactly.
Like a political...
Yeah. I think it's everything. You know, they didn't divide their lives up. It's certainly what's left on some of the stones is what looks like carvings of adzes or axes, and they're all different sizes, but none of them cut over the top of another one. It's like they gave their stamp, I was here, you know, chief so-and-so. There was some inference at one stage that it was kind of a clan system, a little bit like Scottish clans and controlled by relatively few people. Covering a lot of different different areas. I don't know if that theory still holds or not.
It's all guesswork.
It
to
is.
To some degree, because there's no written word.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, the other thing was the ravages of time. And you look at Stonehenge, it's in pieces, but this is not true. It was not the ravages of time. The stone circle was, there were attempts to deliberately destroy it because it was seen as an evil pagan thing.
Yes.
Yeah. If that's true, you can see where they started.
So they would go out and pull a stone down and then smash it up because they thought it was monuments. Because we do know at the centre of the stone circle there was a temple region.
Something. Well, there could have been. There are so many different holes where things have been shifted around. When you get too many holes, it's like looking at stars. You know, you could draw just about any figure with the dots, you know. So some people theorise that there was, but not necessarily.
I was recently watching a documentary by actor Tony Robinson, and he was doing a series of documentaries, The Great Walks of England and all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And one of them, he went through Wiltshire and he talked about Stonehenge. And the Puritans who said, you know, well, this is all evil and it must be destroyed and pulled down. And as you say, they pulled down and smashed up quite a few of the stones, and then they used what they'd smashed up to build the village, the nearby villages. And somebody, I can't remember his name now, but he said, "Hey, this is crazy. Let's put a stop to this because this is our heritage." Yeah. And just a little story about.
There was one argument about the importance of the stone circles, and also there was ancient religions there, is that they provided a system of laws and rules which were above the chieftains. They were the rules of the gods. So when the different tribes came together to work together, they knew what the rules were. These were the rules of the gods and so on. And they say that's one of the important things of the ancient religion, so they laid down the things that you, the way in which you would behave, in other words, yeah.
If you compare that with Māori, then, the house was built in the heavens. So it's built out of stars and arrangements of stars and then copied on Earth.
Yeah.
And if you look at Egyptian, it's a similar thing. It's built in the heavens, the Nile, everything, as in the heavens, and it's copied on Earth.
Mm.
We think of it the opposite way around, but they thought of it that way.
Well, I always say to people, there's something very special about the night sky, which we just take for granted, but which our ancestors would have noticed long, long ago. Number one, the stars appear to be immortal. Generation after generation would see the same familiar stars.
Yeah.
Furthermore, they are untouchable. So it's little wonder that just about every culture placed their god or gods in that place called heaven, the realm which is both immortal and untouchable by mortal beings.
The other thing is those, the capstones that you've got there, the lintels, they're dead level. And that takes a lot of work to get them dead level, I can tell you, after building one. And whether they meant to or not, that becomes the ruler that you can judge the rising and setting of stars from.
Absolutely.
So you would end up with your calendar there. You would end up with your major features over the year on the lintel because you'd notice that the same stars. They probably knew before they built it, but even if you didn't know before you built it, you'd find it soon afterwards.
That's right. Well, as I said, the stone computer, because all these things that we think around us all the time, which we just take for granted, ever wonder how our ancestors will work them out? When to sail. If you sailed at the wrong time of the year, you never came back. If you planted your seeds at the wrong time, there's a good chance your crop would fail and there was no one to bail you out. How did our ancestors know when to carry out these tasks? They did so by the stars. Exactly what Kay's talking about now. You see, as we orbit around the sun, we experience the same seasons in the same part of the Earth's orbit. Consequently, every season, every month of the year has got its own pageant of stars that's rising up in the dawn. And the wise man or wise woman who could read the stars could foretell what was happening.
Mm.
And, of course, from that, the belief all arose that it was the stars themselves which were causing these things to happen.
Yes. It's rather like the Egyptians observing what they call the heliacal rising of Sirius and the same part of the sky just before the sun. And when that happens, they knew that the Nile was about to flood.
Yeah.
And so we better be prepared because, the great river is going to flood. How do you know? Because I could see Sirius rising just before the sun in the morning.
So once upon a time, all these people were all working together. Other thing I always like to explain to people is that you've got to be aware when you're looking at ancient history, the meanings behind words are continually changing.
Mm.
So, we all speak English here, but if you went back to England 800 years ago, you wouldn't understand a word they were talking about. That's how much, And there's quite a lot of words we use today, but most people would know. And often when a group of people out at Stonehenge will say, okay, put up your hand if you're a pagan.
Mm.
Maybe one or two people will put up their hand. I said, I damn, do you know why? Because I live in the countryside. The word pagan comes from paganus, which means country folk. So if you live in the countryside,
yes,
not a town, you're a pagan.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, have we got any villains here?
Yes.
A villain is someone who lives in a village.
Yes.
And the reason
you usually get some who agree at that point that there are a few villains in the village.
And the reason why it's got those connotations is when Christianity moved through territory, they managed to convert the people in the towns where there are lots of people to the new religion, right? But those bloody pagans and villains carried on worshipping the old gods and so on, and they were seen as bad people. And so that's how those things occur here.
And they became enemies of the Christian church.
But you see, the knowledge of these sorts of things is absolutely vital when you pick up something that was written a long time ago.
Mm.
Does that word mean the same? And often when you discover what the real meaning of it is, it suddenly all begins to make sense, yeah.
Yes.
So anyway, our ancestors were using the stars, and what we find, and what amazed me when I began to look at stone circles, is all these very precise astronomical alignments. And as Kay was just saying, and that's why we built Stonehenge, so people could come out and see how these marvellous structures work. down to the last moment what you can see and so in the sky.
But it isn't just confined to astronomy, that's the thing. The whole of their lives was incorporated into it one way or another.
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah. No, there certainly is an enormous amount, and I said, that's what amazed me. So these were, in a sense, were the very first computers, and you could use these stone circles. We use it for what we would call science, predicting what was going to happen, the coming of the seasons, the changing of things and so on. But also it was had its own religious side to it as well.
Yeah, so when the Romans said it was a temple to Apollo, which is the sun, they were actually quite right, but it wasn't just that.
No.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, most of it, because the most important thing in the sky, of course, is the sun.
Yep.
And understanding it. I mean, some things which our ancestors know straight out, but we, most people miss today because they live in a world of technology. The sun rises in the east and sets in the west. Yes, it does that on 2 days of the year only. And when I tell people that, you see their eyes open. Yeah, because it doesn't. And
because the position of the sun rising and setting changes throughout the year.
And gives you the length of the day. That's the reason why the length of the day is continually changing.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Those people are thinking it rises easterly and sets westerly. So it's either side of west or it's either side of east, whereas you're talking about east and west as specific points.
Yeah.
Accurate.
That's right.
Yeah.
You can't say if you mark on the horizon due east, the sun will rise at that point twice a year.
That's right. But generally speaking, people are only thinking of the sort of general direction.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, folks, do come out to Stonehenge. We can talk a bit about it later, but what you will find is got these awesome alignments, right, and in it, which our ancestors would use thousands of years ago to predict things. Mm. And that, in turn, as I said, allowed civilization itself to come into existence. We've also got some special programs coming up at Stonehenge. Sunday, June the 21st, 4 o'clock, we've got, it's the date of the winter solstice, right? And we'll do a special presentation called On the Tales of the Winter Solstice.
Can you tell them what's special about that particular picture?
What's special about it?
Yeah, the sun is setting over the winter.
Oh, yeah.
Solstice stone.
It's setting on the solstice stone, yeah.
This is what we were talking about just now. Yeah. The sun, the position that the sun rises and the position that the sun sets, it shifts around the horizon during the year. So the winter solstice, you're going to see the sun setting directly over that stone, and it's the only time in the year you're going to see it do that.
Yeah.
Solstice means sun standing still. It appears not to move very much for a couple of days maybe 3 days, something like that. So it would be somewhere over that stone for about that time, but the winter solstice event is when it is plumb bang on the middle.
Well, anyway, we hope we'll be able to show you all these things and explain them. Also, all the things you'll find that every major religious festival in the world is directly related to either solstice and equinox. And we'll show you how these all work. All right, so that's the winter solstice. And hopefully, if the sky is clear, we'll be able to take you out and you'll see sunset at the Stonehenge. And the other important one we've got coming up is Matariki. The Legends of Matariki, and that's on Friday, July the 10th at 4:30 p.m. We're going to be doing that in the evening. Matariki is rising in the dawn sky, but I guess most people in the middle of winter don't want to get up then.
Yes, you need to get up in a freezing cold morning to see it.
Matariki, why is it important? Because going back thousands of years ago, it marked the spring equinox, and its rising marked the beginning of the year for all the peoples of Europe and Asia.
Yep.
And that is a tradition that's been brought into the Pacific down here to New Zealand by the ancestors, the Polynesians.
Yes.
But we'll be talking about all those things as well. Anyway, I think we better shut up now because we're just about running out of time. So hopefully we'll see you all soon at Stonehenge. Bye.